Hello, I am Merwat. This is the Ometown Daily News Show, and that is ometown.com. That's what powers the whole shoe. Today's going to be quick. I have been wrapped up in meetings and other stuff all day, and I have about 8 articles, maybe 9. Today has been kind of dominated with, I don't know, let's just call it a certain somebody, and it just was one of those days where every time I was scrolling through, and you can see how I'm going through this, you just kind of click the link and go on to the next page, and it's page after page of articles. I'm actually doing a bunch of work all at once right now, so it's kind of going slow. And what I've been seeing and kind of really not finding anything that is all that particularly, it's more about negative news and stuff like that. And while I don't prevent myself from getting that kind of stuff, it just seems like it was all kind of meh. You know, Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway ramps up its giant Apple stake again and dumps Verizon. So let me, here, I'll even open that and I'll add it to the list of articles that I was putting together. And I just kind of walked away, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna take a break. And I came back and I found about 10 articles or so, and I thought some of them are interesting, but the rest of them are kind of reiterating what we've been talking about for the last 6 months, the expectation of bad economic news coming down the line. What do you think of my backdrop? All I did was, I'm going to change the colors for each show. I hope that adds a little bit something to it. So at any rate, let's get into today's news. I don't have much. I had meetings all day today. I had an event in the morning. But it's 6 o'clock. I actually got here a minute late, but I'm going to get into today's news. Guillermo del Toro is ready to share his nightmarish cabinet of curiosities with you. I actually saw this earlier today, not the whole thing, but the teaser. Though Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities began as a bound collection of the director's nightmarish ideas that weren't quite ready to be realized, each chapter of Netflix's upcoming horror anthology is based on the book. It will tell a fully fleshed out story meant to push the boundaries of the genre. Let's click the link. Charles Pulliam Moore is the author of this article over at TheVerge.com. Says, look inside at your own peril. It's kind of like Guillermo del Toro's Pandora's box of sorts. The Cabinet of Curiosities. I would say that it is not curiosities. It'll spook you. Well, and it says here, well, del Toro is obviously proud of the two original stories he wrote and directed for Cabinet of Curiosity. It's the work of his fellow directors like the Babadook's Jennifer Kent and the Empty Man's David Pryor that he's most excited about in the new featurette. Much of much as Cabinet of Curiosity speaks to the fantastical and at times macabre sensibilities that have defined del Toro's work in particular, the featurette gives you a sense of just how much the directors were encouraged to make their own, their stories their own. I really love anthologies. Above big epic movies, I really love anthologies. I don't know how to really describe what I'm feeling about this, because I like horror movies to some degree. I like things like SCP, you know, Secure, Contain, Protect. I spoke about it a couple of days ago, that there's a whole thing on YouTube about it and on Reddit and on the internet in general. I love these short stories that encompass an entire beginning, middle, and end, and leave some wonder at the end so that you can say, well, is this really going to be the end of it? But it says here, the first two episodes of Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities hits Netflix on October 25th, with two separate episodes dropping nightly until October 28th. So just a few episodes, but I think it'll be great. I won't play any video. Netflix apparently doesn't like it when I play them, but you'll find videos of it all over the place. Let's move on. The next article, which is, wait. Before I do that, let me throw the link. So as I say, all roads lead through Ohmtown to the source. And this is no different. The next article is in the Continuity Report, and that's a show about movies and other things, anything really that can be streamed, or TV shows or whatever, really. Anything that might have a Continuity Report, which is typically a movie or TV shows. Viola Davis is to star in Hunger Games prequel The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes as head game maker. Viola Davis is headed to Panem, as the head game maker in the Hunger Games prequel, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. The Lionsgate movie is based on the 2020 book of the same name, which takes place decades before the adventures of Katniss Everdeen in the Hunger Games. So let's click the link and it'll take us over to Variety.com. Rebecca Rubin is the author of this article. And let's see. Says that she's going to play the mastermind of the diabolical team deathmatch. We'll star opposite Tom Blythe as young Carolinus Snow. Rachel Ziegler as tribute Lucy Gray Baird. Hunter Schafer as Snow's cousin and confidant, Tigress Snow, and Peter Dinklage as Academy Dean, Casca Highbottom. Interesting. So I've never read any of these. I've only watched the movies. And they've gone, I think, as far as the Hunger Games can go, at least, unless they kind of reinvigorate the dystopian world. I'm not sure what happens after the Hunger Games movies. Obviously, the prequel is kind of like Star Wars, you know, going back to the beginning and doing some world building to give people another bite at the apple, I suppose. So what do you think? Do you think that this will be a fun movie to watch, or is it just going to be a money grab? Is there going to be enough there to really drag people into a movie theater, or is it going to go really quick to distribution through services like Apple and Prime and wherever else you can buy a movie immediately instead of having to wait for it to go to theaters? There was a movie that I saw. Oh, what was it? They wanted $30 to purchase it, $30, because it was still in the movie theater. So they wanted $30. So obviously, I mean, there were why? I'm not going to go to a movie theater. So you might as well just let me buy it. Eke out that 10 more bucks because it's in a movie theater where you're not going to get my $40 or $60 or $80. It's just not going to happen. So. Let's hope that it just goes straight into distribution via on-demand services. I mean, I might buy it. I have the other ones, but I never saw those in a movie theater. Let's move on to the next article. This is an interesting one because I'm really interested in John Wick's world building. This is in the Word in Tech. I'm not quite sure why it's in the Word in Tech. My aggregator threw it in there. I guess maybe because it's from The Verge. I'm not quite sure. I'll have to look at the logic behind this one, but it says The Continental, a three-episode series that takes place before the events of the John Wick films, is coming to Peacock in 2023. In a press release, NBC announced that it had reached a multi-year deal for The Continental, which was originally set to premiere on Starz. I would never have seen this if it was on Starz. honest, I think it would have to make it over to some other service because I wouldn't watch it on Stars. I just don't. Unlike the films, The Continental won't center around Keanu Reeves as the titular assassin. It will instead explore the origin of the Continental Hotel that serves as a sanctuary for criminals throughout the John Wick franchise. And again, I love the world building of the John Wick franchise. Let's click this link and go over to The Verge. Emma Roth is the author. It says around the same time as the premiere of John Wick 4. And yeah, in John Wick 4, he's going to go on another killing spree, as one does in an assassin movie, I suppose, where everything that has to do with anything has to do with assassinations from either that side of the fence or this side of the fence. Everybody killing everybody. It's just one of those kind of movies. It says Mel Gibson will appear as an original character named Cormac, a decision that has been met with some backlash due to Gibson's allegedly anti-Semitic, homophobic, sexist, and racist behavior. Other cast members, they just kind of lump that all in there and then say other cast members include Ben Robson as Frankie, Hubert Point du Jour as Miles, Jessica Alain as Lou, Michelle Prada as KD, and Nung Kate as Yen. The limited series will come out around the same time as John Wick, which is supposed to hit theaters March 24th, 2023. Come on, release it earlier. I just kind of want to know more about the John Wick franchise, the world building before John Wick. Maybe they will lead into why the coins exist as the currency that the way that they are and what they're truly valued at in a different time frame, so you can actually gauge then and now. But this is set in 1975 New York, and it says here it follows a younger version of Winston Scott as he tries to gain control of the Continental Hotel. This will be fun. Yeah. At least I can hope. Did I throw this in there? No, I didn't throw it in chat. Sorry, folks. Today's really going to be a short day. I'm just going to kind of plop this out here. The next article is Apple is allegedly threatening to fire an employee over a viral TikTok video. So this is in the Word in Tech as well. Apple is allegedly threatening to fire an employee who posted a TikTok video with basic iPhone security tips. The employee, Paris Campbell, says she was told that she breached company policy by identifying herself as an Apple employee and posting about Apple-related products. Yeah, that's kind of the way that it is. You're representing Apple as an Apple employee, and it kind of sets you out there. And I think it's part of the agreement that you don't represent Apple as an Apple employee. So the company's social media policy warns employees against posting about customers, colleagues, or confidential information, but Apple doesn't specifically bar employees from posting about the technology entirely. We want you to be yourself, but you should also be respectful in posts, tweets, and other online communications and internal document reads. So maybe there's some subtle nuance there. I would not really, it's really tough. In smaller companies and less targeted companies, I would say that nobody would really care. If you're working for a company and you're talking about the company to some degree, the problem is that it kind of puts you out there. And so what you say and what you do can come across as PR, even though you might say that you're not PR, you're saying that you're part of that company. Most companies that I have interacted with don't want people who work for the company talking about the company regardless, because one wrong move turns into a PR nightmare. So this article is over at theverge.com by Zoe Schiffer. Let's see what is in here. Oops, pardon me. Campbell, a single mother living in New York, has worked for Apple for nearly 6 years, most recently as a repair technician in Apple retail. Last week, she responded to another TikTok user who'd lost her iPhone in Coachella, then received threatening text messages saying her personal information would be sold on the black market unless she removed the iPhone from her Apple ID. I can't tell you exactly how I know this information, but I can tell you that for the last 6 years, I've been a certified hardware engineer for a certain company that likes to talk about fruit. being kind of cagey and whatnot. Before warning the user not to listen to the extortionists, your phone is actually useless to them and you're the only person that can save them, and I suggest you don't. That video went viral, racking up 5 million views in roughly 24 hours. On Friday, Campbell received a call from a manager telling her to remove the video or she'd be subject to disciplinary action, up to and including termination. When she asked what would happen if she left the video up, she says the manager walked back the original comment and said that she'd get back to her, and so far she hasn't, or he hasn't. Yeah, well, I would say that poking the Apple is probably not the wisest thing. It's at their discretion. If they want to terminate this person's employment, they can. It's all at will. So, says the popularity of her post might not be enough to stop her from getting fired. Last year, Apple terminated two high-profile activists for allegedly sharing confidential information. But Campbell says her videos don't contain any information that isn't already publicly available. And in a vacuum, I don't know the full context of the video, but telling somebody to ignore the demand. But if the phone is accessible right now to the whoever it is that stole the phone, I would have immediately wiped that thing remotely and notified the authorities, contacted an insurance company if you've got it. Even if you live in an apartment and you have insurance for your apartment, you can just claim your phone. As far as I know, if it was lost anywhere, you can just claim your phone. But you have to talk to your insurance company and verify that you can do that. I think that I can. Luckily, knock on wood that I haven't had to do any of that kind of stuff before, you know, notify my insurance company that something was damaged or lost or stolen. And sometimes credit cards even have that function. So look around. Maybe you can mitigate some of the loss. Unfortunately, the data is gone unless you have cloud backup. But definitely don't unlock it. Don't remove it. Don't give the thief the ability to utilize the asset that it stole. In fact, I would notify the police and see if you can continue tracking it. Let's move on to the next article. In the Smack Talk channel, judge approves Apple's $30 million employment bag check lawsuit settlement. This one I thought was quite interesting. Apple's bid to pay $30 million to settle a lawsuit over employee bag checks has been approved by U.S. District Court Judge on Monday, ending a nearly decade-long legal battle. This thing has been dragging out for a decade. Mike Peterson over at AppleInsider.com wrote this article. Says the court finds that the settlement offers significant monetary recovery to all participating settlement class members and finds that such recovery is fair, reasonable, and adequate when balanced against the risk of further litigation related to damages issues, Alsup wrote in his approval. That's the judge. The complaint stems from a retail policy requiring Apple staff to have their bags and personal belongings checked before clocking out of work. It originally argued that staff members should be paid for the time spent undergoing security checks, which could sometimes last as long as 45 minutes after their shifts ended. Well, yeah, you should be paid, but it's rather dystopian. I mean, to me, if you're going to have something like this, then you have to have a segment of the workplace devoted to lockers where you can lock your personal possessions away. It's like entering a skiff. You're not allowed to bring, you know, personal information, communication of devices and whatnot into a secure compartment. They're locked away outside in a compartment that is away from the secure compartment. Why? That way you can't exfiltrate any information or document something, well, just exfiltrate anything. And thus, this is where we end up. So $30 million because of some needless bag check that could have been solved by having lockers somewhere. Obviously, if somebody loses something, you would have to basically make it a non-private space with video so that you can protect against theft in that secure compartment. And then when they go into work without any other personal belongings and whatnot. See, I mean, it's just kind of, if you can't trust your employees, then why do you have the employee? It's all dystopian. I mean, why not just force them to wear a thong and a transparent bodysuit so that you can verify that they're not walking out with a, you know, diamond wedge between their butt cheeks. I mean, it's just bizarre. But we live in a very untrusting world. And coming from somebody that talks about cybersecurity and tech and IP, yeah, it might sound like I'm usually the cynic, but this is a $30 million settlement because you're doing bag checks. Let's move on to the next article. And this one is a bullying judge gets suspended. It says here, yeah, a judge doesn't get to talk shit about the defendants in his courtroom. True. Yeah, a judge doesn't get to talk shit about the defendants in his courtroom. Arkansas judge Don Bourne, I guess, Bourne. Maybe he thought he was part of the Bourne identity and he was a clandestine operative Manchurian candidate and he was triggered, was accused of bullying, angry demeanor, and impolite behavior and complaints received by the Arkansas Judicial Discipline and Disability Commission. As a result, Bourne has been suspended by the Arkansas Supreme Court without pay for 90 days, with 75 days held in abeyance for 1 year if he satisfies remedial conditions. According to the commission's disciplinary recommendation, Bourne made disparaging comments about defendants appearing before him. One count of the complaint alleged that Bourne made demeaning comments toward Spanish-speaking defendants and negative comments to defendants who are not from Pope County, Arkansas, according to the commission. And the commission said that Bourne was accused of making negative comments about defendants' hairstyles, advising Spanish-speaking defendants to learn English, and telling one defendant to, quote-unquote, go get a job and get that crap out of your eyebrows. This guy. Oh, this guy. He shouldn't be a judge. I mean, judge him on the merit of the case, not their particular appearance. And if somebody wants to have the equivalent of what might be, a piercing wound, as if something had crashed into their car and sent a spike through their eyebrow or whatever it might be. It doesn't even matter. Neck tattoo, face tattoo, whatever. It doesn't matter. A person is a person and it's not up to you to tell them. And I've always disliked that. I used to wear a suit because that was what was expected of me. Work 100-hour work weeks and kind of live up to the expectation of the business sector. And I still get that today, you know, hey, you have to dress for success and all of that kind of stuff. And really what that amounts to is you are placating somebody else's desire for you to conform to your particular or their particular demands, as if that changes my ability to be successful in my career. And meanwhile, there are people out there that are making seven digits as digital nomads, highly skilled software engineers that can do their job anywhere. Professional pen testers in the cybersecurity sector who you wouldn't be able to tell if they were living on the streets, yet they have the ability to hack into any network that they are targeted towards. You just don't know what somebody is capable of, yet you have some numb nuts on the bench saying, hey, go wash your hair. Yeah, maybe it's a lifestyle choice. Judge them on the merits, and your bias becomes apparent as your career goes on when you're a judge and you get complaint after complaint after complaint. It may be in somebody's best interest to be guided in some way to quote unquote better themselves, but it's not the judge's job. So anyway, Catherine Rubino over at Above the Law wrote this article, and normally there's a little bit more snark in it, but I didn't read it line for line. You'll have to go over. It says, Bourne will be ineligible to hold a judgeship again. But it says the court also held that after his current term ends. So let's see what kind of mitigation is going to be in place to limit his damage. The next article is in the Stock Marketeers channel, but it's from MarketWatch, and they have a section called Auto Trader. Why the Hyundai Ioniq 6 makes the Tesla Model 3 seem a bit boring. Oh, by the way, that last article about the bullying judge, I watched a video of a deputy DA get asked, this was really fascinating, but I didn't go looking through my aggregator to find it. I'm pretty sure that my aggregator grabbed it, so maybe I'll do another search and I'll find it for tomorrow's show. But basically, this deputy DA gets questioned by a complainant's attorney. Did you have a conversation with my client before the trial started? And this deputy DA just goes off and starts yelling and gesticulating and pointing. And then the bailiff comes over and says, hey, you need to lower your voice. And she goes off on the bailiff. And then the bailiff grabs her hands and says, okay, I'm escorting you out of the courtroom. And the deputy DA snatches her hands away violently, right? And points at the bailiff. And the next thing you know is the bailiff grabs the suit, her lapels on her suit, and just bangs her against the desk and slides her down onto the floor. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that just went down. It literally went down. And then a whole bunch of other bailiffs show up and escort the person out. And I don't know what the rest is yet. But first off, a deputy DA or anybody that is the counter to the complainant, right? Like if it's the state or if it's anybody, right, they shouldn't be questioning the other person's client until they're in the courtroom or they are being deposed in some way, but through legal channels, not in a hallway or not in a coffee shop because they bump into each other. You respect the legal process because it basically comes across as if you're trying to impact the outcome of the trial. You just shut up and you don't say anything. Don't even bother saying hi. You just walk past them as if they're a complete stranger. And literally they are. The only reason why prosecution or defense or whatever, whichever side you're on, the only reason you know each other is because you're being paid by one side or the other to know who they are. Otherwise, it's a complete stranger. And it's not like you just go running around questioning complete strangers. So you just shut up and you move on. But that's not what this person did. And I'd be surprised if they remain a DA. They might end up in the people's court. No, I don't know where they're going to end up. So I guess it's kind of people's filters are just dropping away. And I think that it's part of the culture we're moving towards, it seems. Anyway, back to the Ionic. I'm so sorry that I get distracted so easily. Like I said a couple of episodes ago, a little mote of dust can float by and I just kind of get distracted. And hey, ooh, shiny. Anyway, the Ionic has a bold look, design details, high-tech features that are way cooler than the Tesla, according to this author. It's over in MarketWatch. Hyundai's new EV has futuristic touches that make the Tesla seem a bit outdated. This has been edited a little bit, apparently. I'm not quite sure. It says three reasons now. Three reasons the Hyundai Ioniq 6 makes the Tesla Model 3 seem a bit boring. It actually started out as the phrase, the title used to be, why the Hyundai Ioniq 6 makes the Tesla boring or something. Look, yeah. Why the Hyundai Ioniq 6 makes the Tesla Model 3 seem a bit boring. They actually change the title like they do at MarketWatch. I'm not sure why that seems to always take place in MarketWatch, but it does. Brian Moody is the author of this article. I actually like the Ioniq 6. I thought that there were recalls with the Ioniq, but maybe they've corrected that. I swear I've had streams where I've spoken about it, but maybe not. It definitely looks nicer. I'm not a big fan of the double spoiler kind of end, rear end of it. But it looks kind of like an Audi CC crossed with the front end of a VW Beetle and the tail end of a wannabe Lexus. I mean, it's a weird composite vehicle, but it looks kind of cool. But I probably won't end up buying anything like this. So it says here the Model 3 looks sparse inside, but the inside of the Ioniq is pretty nice. It looks kind of like it wants to be a Porsche in the very front. You know, the aesthetic of the front kind of, maybe, you know, kind of hints at it. I don't know. And they say that the Model 3 isn't aging well, but I don't know about that either. The Model 3 is just kind of there, you know? It's not the wildest thing. If you have the ability to get, you know, full automated driving, then maybe, according to some of the reports, it can take out children. I don't know why you would want the Model 3. But the biggest thing for me with any of these EVs is the fact that the battery is fixed. And you have to pay an arm and a leg to get it replaced. And I'll never like that. And we have to change that method. It says here, the new Ioniq 6 is cooler and it has more high-tech feeling than the Tesla Model 3. The Model 3 isn't aging well. Granted, it's one of the best things about the Model 3 is the driving experience. The acceleration and handling are excellent. Better than the Ioniq? They don't know yet. Yeah, that's what the author is saying. And if you're an enthusiast that values handling over all else, you might like the Model 3 better. Well, if they don't know what the Ioniq 6 is capable of, then I don't know how they can have a comparison. But I definitely think that we will see more and more problems with batteries as time goes on. But I think that's like 10 to 12 years out as time goes on. It's a rolling target because we don't know really how long the batteries are going to ultimately last before people start freaking out about them. Although I know of one Tesla Model S that ran its course, was sold, and then somebody said that they only drove it for like 1,000 miles before it started throwing all kinds of errors. I don't know the full context behind that, and then they blew it up as some YouTube video effort. Anyway, just we should all hang out and talk about this battery thing as time goes on. We definitely need to address the long-term goals of batteries in the EV space. You can't have these things just floating around when they die. They have to be recycled. And we might as well make a system where it's perpetually being recycled and not ending up just sitting in a landfill somewhere. Somebody's thrown it into, you know, a 40-foot container and deposited somewhere. It's going to be a mess for us all. Not that that actually happens. I mean, they're very expensive, even as wastage. Anyway, USDA recalls frozen pizza over possible metal pieces. I typically, when I find stuff like recalls, I like to bring them into the show. I try to post them as early as possible, but I won't be able to get to this until late afternoon to post it. So if it ends up on YouTube and the keywords draw your attention to it, and you watch this, then check this out. It says here over 13,000 pounds of frozen meat pizza are being recalled due to the possibility of metal pieces in the food. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Safety Inspection Service, on Sunday, August 14th, the USDA made the official recall of 13,099 pounds of Home Run In brand frozen pizzas based out of Woodbridge, Illinois. And the specific products being recalled were made on June 6, 2022. The 33.5-ounce packages of Home Run In's Chicago Premium Pizzeria Deluxe Sausage Classic Pizza. That must be a massive pizza to have all of that written on its box. And they have a Best Buy date of December 3rd, 2022. I'm going to click the link because there might be some more context to this. This is by Kate Newsom over, well, from Nexstar Media Wire, but it's inthehill.com. And maybe there's something else in there. Okay, so it says the packages will also have an establishment number of EST 18498-A inside the USDA mark of inspection. Well, I guess that mark kind of wet the bed there, huh? According to the USDA, the problem was discovered when the distributor received consumer complaints reporting that metal had been found in the pizza. No confirmed injuries or adverse reactions have been reported so far. I think there's one adverse reaction. Consumer complaints. Whatever. They were sent to a distributor in Illinois and then distributed to other retailers across the country. So if you might have those sitting in your freezer, don't eat them. Or maybe get a magnet and run it over and maybe it'll just draw them all out. No, don't risk it. Just go back to the store with them. And maybe, let me see, is there anything else? Yeah, you can call the number 888-674-6854 or send an email to the USDA.gov hotline, MP hotline at USDA.gov. I'll move on to the next article. This one's in the Word in Tech. A new Google Nest router with Wi-Fi 6E. And even before 6 really hit the market, 6E hit the market right after. It has Thread and Bluetooth low energy pop-ups in the FCC filing. So Google appears poised to launch an updated Nest router equipped with Wi-Fi 6E, Bluetooth low energy, and Thread mesh networking radios later this year, according to a new FCC filing. It has a model number of A4RG6ZUC, which is similar to IDs assigned to not only the previous Nest Wi-Fi, but also the Nest Mini thermostat and even Google Glass. I'm actually moving away from Google. Anyway, let's click the link. It's over at The Verge. That's where the article was aggregated from. Umar Shakir is the author. And a subtitle of this is a new FCC filing reveals details of the previously rumored router update. I don't know if they have any other pictures. Anyway, it says that it has 6 antennas, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz dual band antennas for Bluetooth, Thread, and 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi primary. two for 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi diversity, and two 2.46 gigahertz dual band antennas for Wi-Fi. And that's that Wi-Fi 6E band, that 6 gigahertz. So what you're going to really dig about Wi-Fi 6, if nobody's ever said anything to you about it, is it can handle more devices simultaneously connected to the router. What normally happens is it device hops. So it'll send a signal and everything gets, it's nearly instantaneous, but it'll send data, receive confirmation, and move on to the next device. And it just kind of rotates around all of the devices. But when Wi-Fi 6 is deployed, you can have multiple devices. My network handles up to 300 devices. Other networks do not. And it's really built on the hardware's configuration and software that dictates how many simultaneous connections it'll handle. Not all of them are the same. And this has actually happened in other access points in history. Depending on how much you pay, you'll have more simultaneous connection capabilities and even a broader amount of bandwidth dedicated to the wireless network. So for instance, you can have a 1 gigabit network, or you can upgrade to professional or enterprise gear where it can go to 5 or 10 gigabits. Wireless composite data transfer. And it really depends on the equipment that you purchase. So, keep an eye out about what you're looking at and make sure that you know exactly what you're getting. Otherwise, you might get buyer's remorse as you add additional devices to a network, a wireless network. It may overwhelm the entirety of the available bandwidth. And then you actually get kind of bottlenecks and slowdowns, or things will drop off the network entirely because one device is consuming all of the bandwidth and the network may not have a thing called quality of service controls in place. Anyway, lots of inside baseball, but not too inside. Let's see. The current Nest Wi-Fi package comes with a router and single mesh point and sells for $269 regularly, but the price could increase like the competitions this time around. TP-Link's Mesh Wi-Fi 6E option, for instance, comes in a pair as well for $299, and the Aero Pro 6E from Amazon comes in at $499 for a pair. If I were you, I encourage people to move up in their technological footprint for their own security. And so I advise people to look at UDP, what's referred to as the UDM, the Dream Machine from Ubiquiti. It is a larger device and not your network access device. It's not a Wi-Fi access point. It's basically a network gateway. And so you go from the wall into your network, like cable modem or something like that, and then you plug that into the Dream Machine or UDM Pro, as it's called. And then from there, you go out to access points and other networking devices. But if you get that, then you can get access points from Ubiquiti that are much less expensive than this, and more capable than these. Again, though, that's one provider and I have no relationship with them, other than I appreciate their technology. It's kind of a prosumer technology. You have to do a little bit more babysitting, but fact is you'll be better off in the long run. Might have to spend a little more, but for other things, not for the access point stuff. That said, let's move on to the next article. Warren Buffett's Berkshire ramps up its giant Apple stake again and dumps Verizon. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway ramped up its stake at Apple. So What's this all about? Yoon Lee is the... Oh, I'm not going to be able to even talk about it. Because I don't think I've got my login. Nope. Okay. Yeah, we'll just leave it there. It was a last-minute addition. So, at any rate, Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway keep on investing their billions. They've been making a ton of money during the pandemic, and they're reinvesting it all into other companies. I'm not really sure to whose benefit this ultimately is, but money begets money, folks. And if you are smart, learn this lesson and learn it well. Learn it now. Learn it early. Oh, it's a pro thing, so I would definitely have to log in. But invest now and leave it alone. Make sure that you've inquired with others and looked at the risk, and that you are getting a return on your investment somewhere around 8%. Yeah, and don't mess with it. Just invest in it. Unless you have massive amounts of money where you can make a large chunk of money in a day and then trade it out for something else that's going to increase, you have a better chance of just leaving the money somewhere that is moderately secure and moderate risk, and coming back to it in 40 years, and it'll be like Apple. Your investment of $5,000 25 years ago now makes you a billionaire, for crying out loud. Just leave it alone. You're not a day trader, right? You don't have $250,000 every day for you to trade, right? No, you're not a hedge fund manager, right? No. If you want to be Warren Buffett, you start small and you slowly grow, and, you know, maybe, you know, when family gives you money when they pass away, you invest that. And maybe your dad can give you $300 million and your mom can be a real estate... I'm talking about other people. I'm sorry. It's not you and me. Anyway, go over to ohmtown.com, click on links, check it out. Come on back tomorrow around 6 o'clock. Follow, like, subscribe, do all of that kind of stuff, and keep in touch. And then when I stream again, you'll be able to know when I stream, and we can sit there and talk smack about whatever we want. Here's to a better day of news tomorrow. I'll be better prepared as well. So thanks for hanging out. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.